It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Violence in Libya takes another 22 lives. The U.S. hosts a three-day Africa summit beginning today. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. Libya says at least 22 people were killed Sunday in more clashes in the capital, Tripoli, between rival militia. More than 2 weeks of fighting across the country has left more than 200 dead, hundreds wounded. The latest fighting is centered around control of the Tripoli International Airport between rival militia from Misrata and Zintan. Militia shelling set fire to 8 huge oil depots, sending plumes of black smoke billowing in the air over the capital city. Meanwhile, the country's newly elected parliament held its first meeting in the eastern city Tobruk Saturday. More than 150 members of parliament gathered under tight security, but the official opening has been postponed until today. Meanwhile, thousands of Egyptians are being airlifted out of the country. The British Navy is evacuating British nationals. But thousands of Philippine citizens are reportedly refusing to leave Libya, fearing a loss of their jobs. A second American, missionary Nancy Wrightbull, who contracted Ebola in Liberia, will hit home early today. Dr. Kevin Brantley contracted the disease in Liberia, working at the same clinic. He returned to the U.S. Saturday and is now in isolation at Emory University Hospital in Atlanta, Georgia. The head of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Dr. Tom Frieden, appeared on U.S. television Sunday.
It is a very serious condition, and it is currently out of control in Africa, with a high risk of spreading further in Africa. What we're doing now at CDC is surging our response. We are going to put at least 50 public health experts in the three countries in the next 30 days, because actually we do know how to stop Ebola. It's old-fashioned, plain and simple public health. Find the patients, make sure they get treated, find their contacts, track them, educate people, do infection control in hospitals. You do those things, but you have to do them really well, and Ebola goes away.
The current Ebola outbreak has killed at least 700 and is the worst on record. Lisa Schlein now has more on the international response.
The World Health Organization calls the scale of the ongoing Ebola outbreak unprecedented. But WHO spokesman Gregory Hartl tells VOA the outbreak is probably worse than the figures indicate.
There could well be cases in the community that we've missed. People run away. They don't want to be treated in health centers. They're afraid. Or they don't believe that the health centers can do them any good, so they go try to be treated by their families, and they get sick and die there.
Hartl says key elements of the emergency plan are to stop transmission of the Ebola virus and to prevent the spread of the disease to neighboring at-risk countries by strengthening and scaling up all control and response measures. Ebola has an incubation period of between 2 and 21 days. It is spread through contact with the blood or bodily fluids of an infected person. There is no cure, and fatality rates can be as high as 90%. But health officials stress people who seek treatment at a clinic as soon as they fall ill have a better chance of survival. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The United States is to announce billions in new investment to Africa as some 50 African heads of state attend the opening session today of a three-day summit on Africa here in Washington. The money reportedly will involve new business deals, peacekeeping operations, and food and power programs. National Defense University analyst Joseph Siegel says discussions are likely to focus also on security, given the rise of terrorism on Africa.
There's a recognition that part of the challenge is that Africa's police and military aren't always very professional. This can lead to inappropriate or heavy-handed responses, especially when we're dealing with domestic types of security threats, which involve a lot of innocent bystanders, and this tends to alienate the local population and further fuel grievances that might be felt.
South Africa may also push for a 15-year extension of the African Growth and Opportunity Act, which provides eligible African countries preferential treatment in their exports to the U.S. market. Somali officials say a bomb blast in the capital Mogadishu killed 3 women and wounded at least 7 other people. There has been no claim of responsibility. Al-Shabaab Islamist insurgents have escalated attacks in the capital. Meanwhile, 3 men were executed by firing squads Sunday after a Somali military court found them guilty of killing civilians. I'm Victor Beatty reporting.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, August 4th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The three-day U.S.-Africa summit begins in Washington today, Monday.
President Obama's idea of helping the electricity infrastructures in Africa is extremely important, but I thought it should have been a continental project, not like selecting countries based on some criteria.
Sheikh Tijangajo is a former Senegalese foreign minister and now president of the Institute for Pan-African Strategies. South Sudan says it will seek Washington's help to end 7 months of conflict. An outspoken member of the African diaspora says African leaders should find time to meet with their most important constituency. And some experts say poverty plays a role in the spread of Ebola.
You know, you go to a hospital in Sierra Leone or Liberia, and it's not unusual that a healthcare worker will say, well, we don't have gloves or we don't have clean needles.
That's Dr. Daniel Bausch of Tulane University, and experts say African small farmers are possible key to ending the continent's food insecurity. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The three-day U.S.-Africa summit involving about 50 African heads of state begins today, Monday, here in Washington, where the U.S. is expected to unveil nearly $1 billion in business deals, more funding for peacekeeping, as well as commit billions of dollars more to food and power programs in Africa. Congolese President Denis Sassou Nguesso spoke in Washington to an audience of American diplomats and African diaspora. As Mariama Diallo reports, he pointed to terrorism threats and armed violence in Africa, but argued that the issue goes much deeper than military or police action.
The terrorist group Boko Haram strikes repeatedly in Nigeria. Al-Shabaab operates in Somalia, while the Central African Republic faces an insurgency by a coalition of armed groups. Congolese President Denis Sassou Nguesso at the National Press Club in Washington says it's important to address the multidimensional character of security, especially while Africa is still a very young continent.
Most African countries are only 50 years old. This relative youth cannot certainly excuse any mistakes or weaknesses on our part. Let's remember that the turmoil we live in is very much the cut and thrust and the ups and downs of our young adulthood.
He says, as African states seek maturity, security must be addressed as more than a question of defense, but also the viability of young democracies.
The lack of security is often the very result of a number of problems that converges, most especially poverty and injustice. Poverty is without question the first factor in lack of security.
Some diplomats credit Mr. Nguesso's country as playing a big role in promoting peace in the neighboring Central African Republic. CAR Ambassador to the U.S., Stanislas Moussa Kembe.
President Sassou Nguesso knows the Central African Republic very well, and he's really been very engaged in helping us find peace and security.
Most people who attended the event say security in Africa is important, but they also hope that President Obama and the African leaders will address other challenges. Christopher Fumunyo is the regional director for the Africa program at the National Democratic Institute.
Substantive discussions on helping promote trade and investments, helping create an enabling environment that can allow for American private sector as well as African private sector to emerge in that environment and take advantage of the potential that Africa presents.
Cheikh Tidiane Gadio is a former Senegal foreign minister who says that he hopes infrastructure takes center stage.
President Obama's idea of helping the electricity infrastructures in Africa is extremely important, but I thought it should have been a continental project, not like selecting countries based on some criteria.
The White House says 7 in 10 African countries lack access to electricity. The Leaders' Summit will promote the initiative called Power Africa with the goal of doubling the number of people who live with electrical power. In Washington, Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
South Sudan's foreign minister says President Salva Kiir will seek Washington's assistance during the U.S.-Africa summit as part of his administration's effort to end more than 7 months of conflict in his country. Barnaba Marau Benjamin also says Mr. Kiir will exchange ideas with fellow African leaders to find ways of ending the conflict. He tells reporter Peter Clotty that U.S. Special Envoy Ambassador Donald Booth has been instrumental in helping South Sudan resolve its conflict.
The United States government, through the President Obama, they have been greatly contributing in how to help the Republic of South Sudan resolve the present rebellion. Yes, indeed, America has been playing its role. As you know, President Obama appointed a special envoy, Ambassador Donald Booth, assigned specifically to that process. And again, we have full diplomatic relations with the United States government.
Your president is here 2 days of meeting with U.S. officials as well as his colleague, heads of state from Africa. Will he also be talking to some of his colleagues about seeking their input about helping South Sudan return peace to the country?
Yes, indeed. He will be touching bases with the rest of colleagues who have also problems in their countries. As you know, there are issues related to security. These are serious issues also that they need to share ideas and experiences so that peace will be, in fact, at the top of the agenda. The issue of terrorism throughout also will be at the top of the agenda, where United States government can contribute in supporting those countries which are fighting terrorism. And so the African heads of state will put their heads together, indeed, in order to try and resolve these issues and get assistance from the U.S. government, so that the U.S. government is of the same wavelength in the way they look at African problems, not on regime changes, no. In how we can, United States can contribute to cement the democratic processes that will bring peace in Africa, enhance development, and therefore the summit should move in a positive direction that Africa would like the United States to move to.
So there appear to have been talks mediated by IGAD. There's a cessation of hostilities here, a ceasefire there, but it's broken in some way or another. There are suggestions that both sides lack the political will to resolve this problem in spite of the fine rhetoric being expressed by both parties. So what do you say to that?
That is not true. It is not both parties that are violating the ceasefire, cessation of hostilities. As you know, recently the report of monitors, the monitors and verification mechanism, including the mediators, they have actually condemned that it is the rebels who have been violating the cessation of hostilities, because the recent attacks in Nasser as well as in Ayud were actually seen not only by the whole international community, but the IGAD monitors who are placed on the ground came out with a report that it is the rebels that have violated the cessation of hostilities.
Barnaba Marau Benjamin is South Sudan's foreign minister. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from South Africa's capital, Pretoria. An outspoken member of the African diaspora is calling on African leaders to find time during their visit to Washington, D.C. to meet with their most important constituency, the African diaspora. Chika Onyeni, publisher and editor-in-chief of the African Sun-Times newspaper and chairman of the Celebrate Africa Foundation, says the African diaspora remits an estimated $70 to $80 billion each year to Africa with no conditions attached. As such, he says African leaders should give the diaspora the same respect they give to other groups. Onyeni tells me African leaders have most often made themselves available to organizations selected by the African Union office in Washington, D.C.
Most of the time when they come, they're always with the corporate people. They don't really take the diaspora into account. And the thing is that the African diaspora, especially the continental African diaspora, we are the most important constituency for the African presidents. And when they come here, they should at least look out and say, let me meet with my most important constituency. This is a constituency that sends officially $70 to $80 billion a year to Africa. That doesn't include the money that we take with us when we travel to Africa. So we are saying that they should be paying the same attention to us that they pay to all these corporate people who don't contribute.
You claim in your letter that the African leaders' time has been monopolized by the Corporate Council on Africa, which you say has decided to make a lot of profit out of the African leaders' presence in Washington. Why do you feel this way?
Well, first of all, they are having a networking event on the 4th, which is $400 if you are not a member of Corporate Council. And then there is a dinner for Nigeria's president, Goodluck Jonathan, which is $200. And there is one for the Ghana president, which is $200. The one for the Kenyan president, which is $200. And there is one which is exclusive, only by invitation alone, for President Obiang of Equatorial Guinea. Now, when you add all that money up, and then there is a ministerial networking, which is $100. So when you add that up, it's $1,300. And as I said, it is not that we Africans can't afford it, but what do you have to pay to see your president?
But Chika, I think you know Washington very well. Washington is a city where people wheel and deal. And you would say that maybe these African leaders are trying to get the best for their individual countries.
We are not saying they should not do it. But what we are saying is that at least they should devote 1 or 2 hours to getting together with the African diaspora, whereby the ambassador should fund such a meeting. We should not be asked to come and fund it.
Chika Onyeani is the publisher and editor-in-chief of the African Sun-Times newspaper and chairman of the Celebrate Africa Foundation. You are speaking with me from New York City. It is Monday morning, August 4th. And you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. Business leaders from African nations have been visiting key U.S. energy and transportation facilities, seeking ideas and contacts to solve problems that slow economic development in their respective countries. It is an effort to boost U.S. investment in Africa and increase economic growth and employment on both sides of the Atlantic. Trade and investment issues are an important part of a summit between President Barack Obama and many African leaders, which begins today, Monday, here in Washington, D.C. VOA's Jim Randall reports.
Business leaders from African nations have been visiting U.S. airports and energy facilities over the last couple of years. They are seeking solutions for their country's infrastructure problems, as well as business contacts and investors who could provide new technology and financing. More inspection trips are planned, including visits to energy facilities in Houston and Chicago's O'Hare Airport just before the Washington summit. The head of the U.S. Trade and Development Agency, Leocadia Zak, says solving infrastructure problems would help African economies grow faster because farmers and others could get their products to market more easily.
But the cost of transportation is really inhibiting their ability to be able to market those goods successfully in the region as well as within their own country.
Given the right conditions, African markets can flourish. For example, the number of mobile phones in Africa has soared from 15 million to 800 million since 2000, according to a scholar at the Atlantic Council. J. Peter Pham says such growth is aided by Africa's natural resources and fast-growing population, which already tops 1 billion people. He says Africa's population may eventually exceed that of China or India and change global
markets. It's a very young population. By mid-century, a quarter of the world's workers will be in Africa, so it will be a locus of production and jobs as well as a potential marketplace.
That's why the U.S. is bringing together hundreds of CEOs from both sides of the Atlantic in search of investment opportunities in Africa, according to U.S. Assistant Secretary of State Linda Thomas-Greenfield.
We hope that this is a transactional event where leaders will leave and CEOs will leave with some ideas of how they might move forward in a proactive way on investment in the continent.
Some African nations are major oil and mineral producers, and many of their exports go to China. China has invested billions of dollars in Africa over the past decade, and along with the European Union, has replaced the U.S. as Africa's largest trading partner. Beijing's expanding influence in Africa worries some critics who say China does little to promote human rights and good governance. Ambassador Thomas Greenfield says Chinese investment could be good if it leads to more development and jobs for Africans. She says skillful bargaining with potential foreign investors and a stronger effort to clean up corruption will help Africa prosper. Jim Randall, VOA News, Washington.
Agricultural experts say small-scale farmers in Africa can play a key role in ending food insecurity in the region if they are included in the value chain. Small-scale farmers produce an estimated 80% of the continent's food each year, but most lack the capacity to sell their crops in commercial markets. Jennifer Lasuta has more from VOA's West Africa Bureau in Dakar.
Sub-Saharan African countries continue to import more food each year than they export. An estimated 60% of the world's uncultivated farmable land is in Africa, but many people still don't have enough to eat. Experts say that small-scale farmers could be the key to reducing this food insecurity, as well as stimulating economic growth and reducing poverty and unemployment. Adebayo Olukoshi, the director of the UN's African Institute for Economic Development and Planning, says small-scale farmers can play an important role in a country's agricultural development.
The smallholder continues to be a key player on the African continent. They constitute the bedrock of the agricultural farming population. It is clear that if the bulk of the agricultural population is of a smallholder nature, then almost by definition, no strategy of food security can be really truly effective if it does not integrate them fully.
Olukoshi said that not only would more productive smallholders give Africa the potential to feed itself, they could also help African countries serve as a food basket for the rest of the world. But as the number of large-scale industrial farms increases, getting involved in the export market can be near impossible for most smallholder farmers. Edward Diata is a rice farmer from Senegal's southern Casamance region. He says, before you can export, you need to be a big producer. Here in Casamance, we produce just enough to feed ourselves. We grow only what is necessary for our diets. Are there people interested in buying our rice? I don't know. But even if there were, the quantity we produce now doesn't allow for exporting. The coordinator for West and Central Africa's Conference of Agricultural Ministers, Baba Dioum, says farmers such as Diata face four key obstacles when it comes to accessing a larger market.
La première des contraintes, c'est que d'abord, ils n'ont pas une bonne organisation.
He says the first constraint is that there isn't good organization among smallholder farmers. The second is that they don't have the capacity to manage new technological innovations. The third constraint is that they don't have the financial means to scale up production. And the fourth is that they don't have the commercial capacity to be competitive in the global market. Jume said many small-scale farmers also depend on rain-fed agriculture. If the rains fail, then the crops fail, and many farmers are reluctant to invest in something that could lose money. He said that before farmers can scale up, they need to know who they are producing for and have a guarantee that they can sell what they grow and receive a fair price. Jennifer Lazuta for VOA News, Dakar.
A second American who contracted Ebola in Liberia is expected to depart Monrovia tomorrow, Tuesday, back to the United States on a special flight. Meanwhile, Dr. Kevin Brantley, who contracted Ebola in Liberia working at the same clinic, arrived back in the U.S. Saturday and is in isolation at Emory University Hospital in Atlanta, Georgia. Ebola spreads through contact with the blood and fluids of infected people, but experts say the outbreak is also being fueled by poverty and poor governance. VOA's Steve Baragona reports.
In West Africa, they are building the facilities to handle Ebola from scratch. Improvised tents house quarantined Ebola patients. Many hospitals in the region lack basic equipment, says Tulane University virus expert Dr. Daniel Bausch. He spoke to VOA by Skype.
You know, you go to a hospital in Sierra Leone or Liberia, and it's not unusual that a healthcare worker will say, well, we don't have gloves or we don't have clean needles.
Poor health systems plague the continent's other Ebola hotspots, too. Bausch says there's a common factor.
All of the large outbreaks of Ebola or its sister virus, Marburg, happen in places where social and political unrest over the years has decimated the public health system.
The war-torn Democratic Republic of Congo has seen six Ebola outbreaks. Civil wars wrecked health systems in Sierra Leone and Liberia in the 90s and 2000s. Meanwhile, working in neighboring Guinea, Bausch watched paved roads erode to dirt paths and towns slide deeper into poverty under the weight of dictatorship and corruption.
That period of not responsible governments degraded the systems, public health and otherwise, in Guinea, and I think did have a role in leaving the country open to this sort of epidemic.
And like the health systems, many people in Ebola-stricken regions lack the resources to get by, and that puts them at risk. As they cut down forests for charcoal and to grow food, Bausch says they are driving the bats thought to carry the virus out into the open. And poverty is also driving people deeper into the forest in search of food, including so-called bushmeat, which is known to carry the virus. It doesn't have to be this way, says Dr. William Karish with the Eco Health Alliance, also speaking via Skype.
You see a different approach in Uganda, and you have outbreaks in Uganda. And they have invested in their healthcare systems, and they have invested in their education systems. So, of course, they still have these outbreaks, but they're controlled very rapidly.
If governments invest in better education and healthcare systems, he says, the next outbreak could be less deadly. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin at the British Commonwealth Games in Glasgow, Scotland. Mercy Cherono and Janeth Kisa made it a 1-2 Kenyan triumph in women's 5,000 meters, as did James Magut and Ronald Kwemoi in men's 1,500 meters in athletics on Saturday. On the infield, Kenyan Julius Yego emerged men's javelin champion. South African Kotso Mokwena struck gold in triple jump, with Nigerian defending champion Tosin Oke snatching the silver medal. Nigeria bagged 2 silver medals in women's 4x100 meters and 4x400 meter relays. Earlier on Friday, Jonathan Diku led Jairus Birech and Ezekiel Kemboi in a 1-2-3 Kenyan 3,000 meter steeplechase, a clean sweep of the medal podium. Ugandan defending champion Moses Kipsiro retained his 10,000 meters title, while Kenyan Josphat Bett placed second. Kenyan Eunice Sum won women's 800 meters, while Ugandan Winnie Nanyondo clinched the silver medal. Staying in Glasgow. Overall, Kenya topped the medal table in athletics. However, South Africa are seventh on the final medal table at the end of the games with 13 gold, 10 silver and 17 bronze medals. Nigeria is 8th, Kenya 9th, Cameroon 17th, Uganda 18th, Botswana 20th, Namibia 26th, as Mozambique and Mauritius tie in 27th place. Ghana and Zambia are jointly placed in 33rd spot among 37 nations and territories on the final medal table. Turning to football, Uganda paped their hosts Mauritania 1-0 in Nouakchott to advance on a 3-0 aggregate in their 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers on Sunday. Lesotho and Kenya drew 0-0 in Nairobi. Lesotho advanced on a 1-0 aggregate, while in Maputo, Mozambique edged Tanzania 2-1 to progress on a 4-3 aggregate. Early on Saturday, hosts Malawi pipped Benin 1-0 in Blantyre. With the two sides deadlocked 1-1 on aggregate, Malawi required a 4-3 post-match penalty shootout to progress. Similarly, after Rwanda beat Republic of Congo 2-0 in Kigali, with a 2-2 aggregate, Rwanda edged the Congolese 4-3 in the ensuing post-match penalty shootout. Elsewhere, Botswana and Guinea-Bissau drew 1-1. Botswana advanced on a 3-1 aggregate. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Monk, and have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you a summary of Africa news, 50 African heads of state are expected to attend a 3-day Africa summit, U.S.-Africa summit, beginning today, Monday in Washington, where the U.S. will unveil nearly $1 billion in business deals. That's it for this Monday, August 4th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butter in Washington, hoping that you will make this week a very, very productive one.
VOA. Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story.
putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.